One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging. It's often your hormones, too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today. And get your old self back naturally.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
Ready? See if you can identify these five clips in the order that they're played. It could be from a song, a movie, a TV show, or something else. But if it's coming from this podcast, then you know that it's from Generation X. Listen closely. Good luck.
Ray, when someone asks you if you're a god, you say yes!
And welcome to Who Will Save Generation X, the trivia game show that is dedicated to remembering, celebrating, and preserving all the wonderful qualities of Generation X through games, trivia, and friends. I am Xavier, host, and today we are back with our next single-player edition of the show that we call The Home Game. This alternative format of the show gives you the chance to play at home, with a friend, or by yourself, as well as giving you your fix of Gen X trivia in between regular episodes of the show. Here's how we play. Each episode, we invite a special guest and let them set the benchmark score for you to try and beat. Each round has a different game for you to try out, and at the end, you can compare your score with that of our special guest benchmark and earn your rank on the quiz. Happy Halloween, everybody! Every year, the podcast celebrates our favorite holiday with a special Halloween episode, and tonight is our next Halloween special episode we have for you this year. This episode is probably going to come out after Halloween. Apologies, life gets in the way sometimes. But we hope you enjoy it nonetheless. A special episode calls for a special guest, and this year we are thrilled to welcome back our friend who is a Gen X horror film junkie, the lovely and talented Denise, Mistress of the Dark.
Hello, darling.
Hi, Denise. Thanks for coming back on the show.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
It is our pleasure. Please say hello to the listeners and tell them a little bit about yourself and how you feel about setting the benchmark score for this episode.
The 1980s was a great time to be a horror fan. And for someone who admittedly began my journey as a scaredy cat, it's amazing I turned out like I did because I have such a love for the horror genre. I began watching horror movies at a very young age. My mother didn't care that I was watching them. And for the first few years of my life, she tried to make it somewhat kid-friendly. But of course, I loved being scared. And so I watched all the old Hammer movies and I just began this incredible love. As far as the benchmark, I am quite confident that I can crush it as I did last year.
So certain are you.
I am a little bit nervous because I think you might have made this a teeny bit harder than last time. So we'll see.
Of course I made it harder. You got almost a perfect score last time. There's no way I'm going to let you get back-to-back perfect scores on this podcast. That ain't happening.
And outdo you on your show.
That's right. But I want to know, what exactly is a kid-friendly horror movie?
She tried to start me on what she thought was kid-friendly, which was really werewolves. Instead of, you know, just a deep dive into The Exorcist, she started showing me Silver Bullet. Yeah. She was like, oh, it's a werewolf movie. She'll be fine. No, I had nightmares for weeks.
Yeah, Stephen King writes shows for kids, right? Like, what could be wrong?
Right.
There are a total of 28 points available in this episode. So everyone, please keep track of your score and we'll see how well you did versus our special Gensh benchmark at the end of the episode. So that's enough talking about it. Let's do it. It's time to see if you can save Generation X from fading into oblivion.
Round one.
Round one today is a game that we call Taglines Blowing Through My Mind.
Tag.
In this game, I will give you the tagline or slogan for a popular Gen X movie, and you need to tell me which movie the tagline is from. A good movie tagline should give a quick glimpse at the plot of the movie, and that should give you all the clues that you need to figure out each movie here. There are three movies to name in this episode. Each correct answer is worth 3 points if you know it from the tagline alone. However, there will be two hints available to you, but for each hint that you ask for, they'll be worth one less point. So I'm going to say the tagline. If you know it right away, it's worth 3 points. But for each hint that I have to give you, it's going to be worth fewer points. Here we go. Here's movie number one. These are free hints right here. IMDb calls this an R-rated 1981 supernatural body horror buddy comedy. The tagline is, from the director of Animal House, a different kind of animal. From the director of Animal House, a different kind of animal. Do you know the name of that movie?
I know what this is. It's a werewolf movie. American Werewolf in London.
Judges, is it American Werewolf in London? Well done. That's 3 points from the tagline.
John Landis.
You see, we try to set you up with the ones that require hints that are very difficult to get off the bounce to guarantee that you wouldn't get a perfect score. But here you go again.
Nice try.
For those playing at home, here's your 2-point clue. The IMDb credits include David Naughton, Jim Henson as Kermit the Frog, and Frank Oz as Mr. Collins. But before you ask, the correct answer is not Pride and Prejudice and the Muppets. Your 1-point clue is there's an alternative tagline, and it was called Beware the Moon. But you didn't need any of those clues, Denise. You crushed it. Well done.
Once you said director of Animal House, it clicked.
You're smart. Here's the fun fact. The movie has lingering effects for both the audience and those in the movie. Co-star Griffin Dunne stated that his biggest fear about being in the movie was that his mother, who was very ill at the time, would not be able to handle seeing a film where her son appears as a mutilated corpse. However, it turns out that when she did finally see the movie, she was indeed deeply disturbed by it. Nice work, bruh. The star of the film, David Naughton, was reportedly cast because John Landis had seen him in a television commercial for Dr. Pepper. Ironically, Naughton was later let go by Dr. Pepper because of his nude scene in this film.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper. Wouldn't you like to be a pepper, too? Be a pepper, drink Dr. Pepper.
Come on.
Be a pepper, drink Dr. Pepper.
Right.
Be a pepper, drink Dr. Pepper.
You get to see some naughty Naughton butt in this movie, if I remember correctly. Here's movie number two.
All right.
It's not funny. Movie number two. IMDb calls this a horror sci-fi movie from 1982. The tagline is, man is the warmest place to hide. Man is the warmest place to hide.
That is the legendary John Carpenter's The Thing.
Is it The Thing?
Yes.
Of course it's The Thing.
One of the best movies ever.
I didn't watch that till I was an adult, and I agree with you. It holds up. It's great. So many times you go back to see movies that were really popular or had a following back 40 years ago or whatever, and they don't really hold up. But The Thing totally holds up even as a first-time viewer. I loved it.
It encaptures you from the very beginning.
Once
you see that dog, you want to know what's going on and how it just transfers to each person. You don't know, and it's
right.
Awesome. The special effects are some of the most amazing in all of horror films.
And you think that they had to like really invent a lot of those practical effects just for the movie too. That kind of craftsmanship doesn't go into movies anymore. And it's a shame. For those playing at home, your 2-point clue, let's see if you would have got it on this one. An alternative tagline is anytime, anywhere, anyone. It's a little vague, but it makes sense if you know it in context. And your 1-point hint is the movie has no female characters in it. But it does have Adrienne Barbeau's voice in it as the chess-playing computer. And I think I speak for most men when I say, if you have Adrienne Barbeau to be in your movie and you only use her voice, then you are missing the boat, my friend. This is the first of John Carpenter's feature films in which he did not score it himself. Ennio Morricone composed a very low-key Carpenter-like score filled with brooding, menacing bass chords. Unused music composed for this film was later used by Morricone in Quentin Tarantino's film The Hateful Eight. Ironically, Morricone's Thing score was nominated for a Razzie for the worst score, while his score for The Hateful Eight won him an Oscar.
You know that John Carpenter was married to Adrienne Barbeau during that time, right?
Did I know that? No, I did not know that. And hopefully John Carpenter doesn't listen to this podcast because I kind of objectified his wife. And here's the last movie in the round. IMDb calls this an unrated body horror, dark comedy, zombie horror, sci-fi movie from 1985. It's a bit of a mouthful. Let's see if you can get perfect on this one, Denise. I'm not going to lie. I'm going to be a little upset if you do. But do your best. Here we go. The tagline is, death is just the beginning. So let me give you every opportunity to get this right. It's an unrated body horror, dark comedy, zombie horror, sci-fi movie from 1985. The tagline is, death is just the beginning.
Oh, I know this. That is Reanimator.
Damn it. Correct. I wrote all these fun clues. I don't get to use any of them. Well done, Denise. You've went perfect for round one. That 3 for 3. Yes, that is indeed the Reanimator.
It's H.P. Lovecraft. I would be highly disappointed if I got that one wrong.
I mean, I know you're really smart and know your stuff, but this is next level stuff. Well done. That's honestly, this is a great job. Your 2-point clue is, an alternative taglines are, Herbert West has a good head on his shoulders and another one on his desk. If you remember the movie, that makes a lot of sense. And also, this would have given away to you because you're smart, H.P. Lovecraft's classic tale of horror. Your 1-point hint was, the movie's main star is Jeffrey Combs, but second billing has to be the syringe filled with phosphorescent green reagent. And here's your fun fact. The special effects department went through 24 gallons of fake blood during the shoot. Makeup effect John Artis said Reanimator was the bloodiest film he had ever worked on. In the past, he had never used more than 2 gallons of blood on a film. They used 24. David Bowie once said that this was his favorite movie. He was very excited to work with the cinematographer of this movie on one of his projects. And if anyone's ever seen David Bowie in Labyrinth, they know exactly how excited David Bowie is to be about being in movies.
Friends call me Jared, and Bowie says, dick, magic, crush, magic, crush, magic, focus on my massive bulge, I can also juggle balls. Wang, magic, wang.
That's a dick joke, just in case anyone missed it. Before we start round two, let's take another listen to The Power Struggle.
Ray, when someone asks you if you're a god, you say yes!
Round two of this episode is our trivia round. Each complete correct answer is worth 2 points. If you think you can convince the judges into giving you a partial credit for your answer, you can award yourself 1 pity point for your partial correct response. We'll use the honor system here. But not for you, Denise. You're going to have to earn them. Good luck, everybody.
Making it hard for me.
Now I am. I can't believe you went 3 for 3.
It's a challenge now.
Yeah. Okay, so here's your first question in the trivia round. It's called Try to Enjoy the Daylight. This is a television question. Created by horror movie legend George A. Romero, Tales from the Dark Side was an anthology series that explored horror movies from the well-known authors of the day, often adapted for TV by the authors themselves. The series originally aired as a pilot in October of 1983, but it had a different name. Your question is, what is the original name of the TV show Tales from the Dark Side? So I almost don't want to give you the multiple choice on this because if anyone that I know could get this correct, it's you. However, for the listener's sake, we're going to give the multiple choice options here. Is it A, Trick or Treat? B, Doom Watch? C, Tales of the Unexpected? D, Armchair Thriller? Or is it E, Pick and Save Twilight Zone?
This was an easy one for me. It's Trick or Treat.
Did you even need the multiple choice?
Nope.
Damn it.
I was getting ready to hear that Dean from the jump.
All right. Option A, Trick or Treat is the correct answer. All of the other options were from British scary TV shows of Generation X. And I'm sure our two British listeners picked up on that. I'm sure the only thing that scares them more than their TV shows was having to go to the dentist. Come on, two British listeners. Are you going to sit there and let the judges make fun of your jacked up black pudding incisors? Or are you going to email us and let us know we need to knock it off with lame jokes? I know you guys have no clue what Halloween is, at least the real Halloween. So if I'm going to get it wrong, then just drop us a line at whowillsavegenx@gmail.com and tell us about it. We are still waiting to hear from our two beloved British listeners. Reach out, Gubna.
Headley and Weitch, the British toothpaste. You don't have to brush your teeth every week, but you just might want to.
Headley and Weitch, for a smile that says, yum, that was good.
Here's your fun fact on this one. The original broadcast wasn't intended as an episode of the show until the Tales from the Dark Side intro was tacked on. Speaking of which, the show is great, but not as great as the intro. That freaky negative image of trees, the malicious voiceover, and those synthesizers and the theme music all set the creepy vibe that made this an instant classic. When the series was eventually released to DVD, fans were disappointed to discover that the original soundtrack scores in the background of each of the show had been replaced by a modern synthesized knockoff keyboard track. The company releasing the DVDs was unable to secure the rights to the original music and had to replace it. The only known existing copy of the shows with its original soundtrack included were VHS rips from pirate torrents. It's unknown if the original shows with their soundtracks were ever archived or they might have been destroyed. It seems that even the world of international copyright law has
a dark side.
Here's question number two. It's called Unpleasant Dreams. This is a movie question, believe it or not. Cassandra Peterson's absolutely iconic character Elvira skyrocketed fame after hosting Elvira's Movie Macabre on local TV stations in Los Angeles. As host, she would present and sometimes riff on B-horror movies. The character became so popular that a feature-length film was written and produced for her called Elvira, Mistress of the Dark. The movie was met with mixed reviews when it premiered in 1988, but it is considered a horror comedy cult classic. Here's your question. In the movie, Elvira travels to a small town in Massachusetts to collect an inheritance, which includes a mansion, a recipe book, and a pet poodle. Okay, Denise, show me what you got. What was the poodle's name in the movie Elvira, Mistress of the Dark? Here's your multiple choice options. Is it A, Mohawk, B, Ottawa, C, Cheyenne, D, Algonquin, or is it E, Brad Pitt?
And that was the most punk rock dog I have ever seen in my life. The name of the poodle is Gonk. He was so rad.
Gonk? What was his full name, though?
I don't know. I just know Gonk. Well, I remember she named him Algonquin, but she didn't like the name, so she renamed him Gonk.
Yeah. Yep, you're absolutely right. Actually,
Did I argue my way into this?
100%. I think you got it correct. I think the judges who wrote this question got it wrong.
Bomb.
That's more like it, Algonquin. Gonquin. What a sissy name. Let's see, what do I call you?
I know. Gonk. How do you like that?
So, you know, Denise, it's one thing to just get the question right. You don't got to show us up by also proving that we got the question wrong, all right?
This is my second time doing this, too, where I argued my way out of an answer.
Well, here's the fun fact. Elvira and Brad Pitt have two connections. He was up for the role of Randy in her movie before he became a big star. Denise, feel free to correct me if any of these fun facts are incorrect as well. He didn't get the role because it was thought that the audience wouldn't believe that a man that sexy would be turned down by Elvira for Bob. He didn't get the role, but years later, Pitt was able to buy Elvira's house from her. She warned him that it was haunted, but reportedly that only made him want it all the more. He bought it for a reported $1.7 million, but after living in it for three decades, he has since reportedly sold that 29-room mansion for about $40 million bucks. This is supposed to be a scary episode of the podcast, and we thought not much could be scarier for our middle-aged listeners than the thought of real estate prices. Ooh. Here's the next question. It's called Cycle of the Werewolf. Based on his novella, Cycle of the Werewolf, Silver Bullet was the 10th movie adaptation of Stephen King's writing. This modern take on an old werewolf story stars Corey Haim, Megan Fellows, and the great Gary Busey. It shares all the hallmarks of a classic King story. It's a coming-of-age story that brings siblings closer together, and not to mention that the movie also does not take place during the year that it came out, which was 1985. Your question, though, is, during what year do the events of Silver Bullet take place? Is it A, 1958, B, 1964, C, 1976, D, 1989, or is it E, 1969?
69, dudes!
The movie takes place in 1976. And I know this because that movie has stuck with me for life. That was the one movie that gave me nightmares for months.
Judges, is it 1976? Do I even need to ask? Of course it's correct. Well done. That's two more points for you. There was a lot of conflict surrounding the costume design of the werewolves in this movie. Most of the conflict was between Stephen King and the film's producer, Dino De Laurentiis. King wanted a subtle look to the werewolf, one that made it difficult to see, while De Laurentiis wanted something big and scary. The two were at an impasse for so long that the rest of the movie had been filmed before the director had an answer as to what costume to use. Finally, De Laurentiis backed down. Because of the last-minute scrambling, production didn't have an ideal stunt worker to play the wolf, so the job ended up being done by the same guy who played the human version of the werewolf, Everett McGill. I mean, you got to make do with what you got. I get that. But I feel like they missed an obvious solution to this problem. All they had to do is put a little werewolf makeup on Gary Busey and give him a few shots of tequila, and I think they would have had the creature feature that we all would never forget.
I once read a review that said that it was very low-grade Stephen King fiction, and he thought that the wolf looked less like a wolf and more like Smokey Bear with a terrible hangover.
Ironically, Gary Busey also looks like Smokey the Bear with a hangover. So it would have worked out either way.
That is correct. And he acts like one, too.
And he acts like one, too.
The next time you come to the forest, do me a favor.
Utah, give me two.
So here's your next question of the round. It's titled, My Blood is in Your Veins. It's also a movie question. In The Lost Boys, Santa Carla, California's coolest biker gang, has a killer secret. I said a killer. No, never mind. Okay, moving on. With fangs, good looks, leather jackets, good looks, a taste for blood and mischief. And did we mention good looks? It's hard for the new kid, Michael Emerson, not to be intrigued by these dudes. As he grows closer to the members of the group, Michael is eventually invited to their exclusive secret hangout. Your question is, what abandoned location in the movie, The Lost Boys, did the gang turn into their secret hideout? So they had a place that they used to gather, and one of these multiple choices is that place that they gathered. Was it A, luxury hotel that sunk during the 1906 earthquake? B, a parking lot attached to a mall that burnt down? C, a hidden cave off an unpopular stretch of beach? D, an abandoned orphanage that used to house nuns that harmed the kids there? Or is it E, the Peach Pit? This one is a little bit tricky, though, Denise.
I want to say it's the cave. It's the cave. And didn't it, like the ruins after it was destroyed by an earthquake?
So those are two parts of two different answers. Which is their official hangout?
The cave. The third option that you said.
Are you sure you want to go with that? Am I being a jerk right now or being a nice guy? Can you second guess yourself?
You are.
Which one?
This is where, it gets tricky. Jerk?
So you narrowed it down between luxury hotel or the cave. Which one do you want to go with?
The cave.
The cave, unfortunately, is incorrect.
The cave. Remember your failure at the cave.
I'm sorry, Denise.
Oh, this is the first one I got wrong.
Yeah. It's a curveball, too, and I feel kind of bad about it.
Do you?
I do. I really do. Because if I wanted to get one wrong, I wanted to be one that's not kind of a tricky one. Because this is a tricky question. It's tricky. It's
Yeah.
The lair of the Lost Boys is the hotel in the sunken ruin that's also in a cave in Hudson's Bluff. So it's kind of like both. The question is kind of misleading in a way.
That was deliberately misleading. That was good.
I mean, she said the cave, the things in a cave was also in the hotel. Are we going to give her a pity point? Would you accept a pity point, Denise?
A pity point?
A pity point, because you got it wrong. That's the wrong answer. But, I mean, the hotel's in a cave. So the question's kind of jacked up.
I got it half right.
Okay. If the questions are worth 2 points, we'll give you 1 point for it. How's that?
Perfect. Okay. I'll take the pity point.
Like I said, this is a little tricky. The Lair of the Lost Boys is in the hotel in the sunken ruin of the cave in Hudson's Bluff. The hotel was destroyed in the 1906 San Francisco earthquake, and it is sometimes called the Atlantis Hotel by fans. So option A is the correct answer.
We actually talked about Lost Boys last time, too.
Did we? Was it about a cave?
It was about me thirsting over Jason Patrick.
Well, let's see who you thirst after for this episode. David's edgy look wasn't all just for the character. His black gloves become a must after Kiefer Sutherland broke his wrist on the set trying to do a motorcycle stunt, and they were used to hide his cast. Sure, many people think Kiefer Sutherland has a sexy look in this movie, but surely the most thirst-worthy person in this whole movie has to be the shirtless saxophone dude. Am I right, Denise? Denise?
Oh, just take one look at his oiled, waxed-up body. How could you not? Jason Patrick who?
Well, this movie did kickstart the vampires into the kind of sexy pop culture that they are in today. So if millennials can have a Team Edward versus Team Jacob, I guess we can have a Team David versus Team Waxed Up Shirtless Saxophone Dude.
Way better. Boo. No sparkly vampires.
Agreed. Here's the last question in the round. It's called, it's hard to buckle your shoe when you have knives on your fingers. In the film A Nightmare on Elm Street, directed by Wes Craven in 1984, an adaptation of One, Two, Buckle My Shoe nursery rhyme was sung by a chorus of creepy children as they skip rope. A Nightmare on Elm Street is about a crazy killer stalking teenagers and murdering them in their dreams. Because kids are fascinated with death, they turn the legend into a jump rope rhyme. Because nothing motivates you to jump rope like bloodshed. For this question, you will get 1 point each of the lines you can quote from this adapted nursery rhyme. You will also get style points if you can do it in the musical style of a creepy, bloodthirsty girl skipping rope. Okay? So for each number set you recite, you'll get 1 point. There are 5 number sets available. So there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and so on. So for this question, it could be worth up to 5 points here. Listeners, if you're down on points right now, here's your chance to catch up. I'm guessing you are down on points. So anything can still happen. They changed some of the lyrics from some of the movie sequels. So for continuity's sake, we're using the rhyme from the first movie only. Denise, let's hear it in your creepiest schoolgirl voice. The 5 lines from Freddy's theme song. Anytime you're ready, take it away.
Oh God, do I have to sing it?
Well, you get style points. If you don't want style points, okay. You don't have to sing it.
No, I want to go all out. Okay. 1, 2, Freddy's coming for you. 3, 4, better lock your door. 5, 6, grab a crucifix. 7, 8, gonna stay up late. 9, 10, never sleep again.
Judges, let's see how well Denise did.
1, 2, Freddy's coming for you. 3, 4, better lock your door.
Well done. You didn't get that dramatic pause right at the end for 9-10. Judges, are we going to dock her a point? No, we're not going to dock her a point. Okay. I'm just looking for ways to take points away from you, Denise. But it's not going to happen. You went 5 for 5 on that one. Well done.
That was terrible.
I thought it was a fun question.
Oh, the question was fun. Okay. You had me singing on air. That's awful. I feel bad for whoever has to listen to that. Well, this is a Halloween episode. Right. It's supposed to be terrifying.
Okay, we're going to take another listen to the Power Struggle clip before we start round 3. But before we do that, let's hear a quick word from our sponsor.
Hello, darling. Yes, sirree, it's little old me, that gal with a shape that drives me mate. Yeah, well, it's something to think about. And something else the advertisers would like you to think about are these little pearls of wisdom. They're commercials coming right up, so stick around.
Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're not alone. With over 1,000 hormone disruptors in our environment, it's no wonder things can feel out of balance. On top of that, natural changes like PMS, menopause, and other life stages can leave you feeling tired, irritable, and trapped in a constant battle with your body. But here's the good news. You don't have to suffer through it. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is here to help. This herbal formula fine-tunes your hormones, balancing estrogen, testosterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol, which can contribute to weight gain, racing thoughts, poor sleep, and more. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. Ready to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, get 15% off your first order at happymammoth.com using code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
If you're enjoying the show so far, please consider giving us a positive review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from, and subscribing for future episodes. The only way a show like this gets anywhere in the podcasting world is by positive reviews and word of mouth among friends. So, if you're inclined, please help spread the word about the podcast and share it with that special Gen Xer in your life. We'd love to have you as a friend of the show. Thanks so much!
The Power Struggle.
Ray, when someone asks you if you're a god, you say yes!
Long live the new flesh.
Fate up against your will.
Round three.
Round three today is a game we call Satanic Panic.
Could it be?
Gen X was no stranger to pearl-clutching parents who lost their freaking mind when they learned what backmasking was. After that, it seemed like the devil was hiding everywhere in pop culture, and the Satanic Panic was born. For this game, I'll play parts of three popular Gen X songs, and you need to give me the artist and title of those songs. However, to honor those overprotective parents, we're going to play the songs backwards, and unlike our parents, not hear messages from Satan. Score yourself 1 point for artist and 1 point for title. 2 points possible for each of these since it's kind of difficult. All of these songs will have some sort of loose attachment to Halloween, or at least will be Halloween adjacent. So keep that in mind as you play. So Denise, you're crushing it on horror movies. Let's see how well you do with loosely tied Halloween music. If we're going to get you anywhere, I think this is where it might be. Here we go. Song one is from 1989, and Google says that this is an alternative music song, which I don't 100% agree with that label. We'll see what you think about it after we're done. Here we go, Denise. Please give me the name of this song and the band of this spooky song played backwards. Here we go. I guarantee if you heard it forward, you'd get it in a second.
But can you get that song played backwards?
You have got me here. This is the one that really has stumped me.
Guys, we did it! Guys!
It must be the satanic messaging I'm getting from it.
So it's from 1989. Google says that this is an alternative music song, which I disagree with. It is a spooky song, not necessarily a Halloween song, but it is kind of spooky. And I'd say it's probably the most well-known scary song from this band.
I want to say The Cure, but it doesn't sound like The Cure when it's played backwards.
A lot of stuff doesn't sound like it's supposed to play backwards. That's kind of the hook of the game.
The point. I want to say The Cure.
And what song do you want to say by The Cure?
Is it Fascination Street?
It is not. Let's take a listen and see if you can get it from the reveal.
And I feel like I'm being eaten by a thousand million shivering furry holes.
Well, you did get The Cure, so you get 1 point for artist, but you did not get the name of the song, so you don't get that point there. Still, you pulled out a point out of this one. Well done.
And of course, it's a lullaby.
Of course, it's Lullaby. I didn't want to answer it for you. I feel like we've talked about this song several times on the podcast in previous episodes, but how can we have a Halloween episode and leave off the scariest song by the greatest band of all time? Here's your fun fact. Upon its release, Lullaby became The Cure's highest charting hit in their home country when it reached number 5 on the UK singles chart. It remains their only single to reach the top 5 in the United Kingdom, surprisingly. In North America, the song was released as the second single from Disintegration album, the first of which being Fascination Street, which was your guess. But it only reached number 74 on the Billboard Hot 100. Once again, proving that the United Kingdom has a better taste in music than those in North America. I'm assuming the Canadians didn't do their part to help drive the song higher on the charts. See, two British listeners, we give you props when they're warranted. It's not just all a bunch of bad teeth jokes. Are you a fan of The Cure, Denise?
Oh, I love The Cure. Disintegration is my favorite album.
Same. It's a perfect album. Every track, absolutely perfect.
There's no better love song than Pictures of You.
Except for maybe Love Song. On the same album.
Of course.
Here's song number 2 from 1995. It is an alternative rock song. Please give me the name of this song played backwards and the name of the band who made it famous. What's your answer?
This one was easy. Bullet with Butterfly Wings, Smashing Pumpkins.
Let's see if she's right.
The world is a vampire. Sent to drain. Secret destroyers. Hold you up to the flames.
Well done. That's another 2 points for you. Okay, so we said the songs were at least Halloween adjacent. And although this song has nothing to do with Halloween and is more about Billy Corgan dealing with his newfound fame and warning against allowing anger to define you as it can ultimately trap you in your own rage, the band does have the name Pumpkin in it. And there's a mention of a vampire, right, guys? And when asked why the band chose Bullet with Butterfly Wings for their first video off Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness, Corgan responded, "The record company did a survey of Kmart shoppers between 30 and 40, and this is the song that they came up with." He sarcastically insinuating that this is a blue light special of some kind for the music video. And since most of us got our crappy Halloween costumes that consisted of a plastic mask and vinyl tarp at Kmart, the judges thought it qualified to be on the show here tonight.
It was also the last time Billy Corgan had hair.
And if that isn't frightening enough to also make it Halloween. And finally, song number 3 is from 1985. It is a pop rock song, according to Google. Here's your last chance to score some points. If you can tell me the artist and title of this song played backwards.
Silent move. Get out.
Oh, hold on. Let's see if your East Coast bias keeps you from getting this correct or not.
Oh my God. Thing, it sounds so weird played by backwards. Is it Dead Man's Party by Oingo Boingo?
Is it? Let's find out.
It's a dead man's party. Who could ask for more? Everybody's coming. Leave your body at the door. Leave your body and soul at the door.
If this song is not on your Halloween mixtape, then shame on you. Oingo Boingo was famous for their Halloween concerts. From the early 80s to the late 90s, you could count on Oingo Boingo's show to be available at Irvine Meadows Amphitheater or at other concert venues in Southern California. Their last Halloween show was released as a concert album called Farewell in 1996. The band played a series of five nights ending on Halloween night by playing more than 44 songs during a four-hour set that went well past midnight. An amazing way to say farewell to this Halloween tradition. I spent my teen years in Southern California in the 1980s and 1990s and was a Boingo fan. Denise, ask me how many times I spent Halloween with one of my favorite bands playing epic concerts with my buddies who offered to buy me tickets. Ask me. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
The correct answer is none. Never. It's one of my biggest regrets in life that I hung on to trick-or-treating a few years longer than I should have and missed out. To this day, I still have friends who went to those shows who tease me about it, how much I missed out, and there's no amount of full-size Snicker bars that can fill up the Danny Elfman-shaped hole in my heart from not going to those shows.
My friend threw a party, a Halloween party called Dead Man's Party, and she didn't know who Oingo Boingo was or that song. What? That was a travesty. That was a hole in my cold, black heart.
Did you spend most of your life on the East Coast, though, growing up?
Yes, I grew up in Boston, but I lived in Malibu and Santa Monica for 2 years.
All right. So you did have some West Coast, because it's my contention that people on the East Coast don't have the same love for Oingo Boingo as we did here in Southern California. So I was wondering if that would translate to your experience, but you have some ties to SoCal. So I guess you're not the person to ask. But
you were
your
right
buddy.
About that, though. I haven't heard a lot of people here talk about Oingo Boingo. You might be right. I never noticed that.
Your friend didn't know who they were. Was that in the East Coast?
No. Yes. Rest your case.
Checkmate. That's all the evidence I need. One anecdote about a Halloween party. Done.
This mission is over, Ramble. Do you understand me? This mission is over.
Now that I'm about to cry from thinking about my wasted teen years, we'll take one last listen to the Power Struggle question and see if you can get your answer right. Here's your last listen, Denise.
Ray, when someone asks you if you're a god, you say yes!
So you have scored at least 1 point on every single question for this episode, and it all comes down to the power struggle. Denise, what is your final answer for the power struggle question of this episode? Remember, you need to name each of these clips, 1 through 5, where they're from, and in the correct order. What do you got?
1 is Devil Inside by INXS. 2 is that was said by Winston in Ghostbusters.
You're flexing 3. Now saying who's saying the lines, but go ahead.
I have to in order to make up for this one, because I genuinely do not know this one. You have stumped me on this, so good job.
I think, seeing how this is a Halloween episode, you're smart enough to figure it out. The Devil Inside, clip number 1? Correct. Winston from Ghostbusters? Correct. Clip number 3 is? Or do you want to save that for last?
I'll save that for last.
Okay.
Number 4, I want to guess Videodrome.
It's a great guess, because it's correct.
Number 5 is The Killing Moon by Echo and the Bunnymen.
Once again, so ladies and gentlemen, it all comes down to clip number 3. Denise, for solving the power struggle, which rarely happens on this show, what do you got?
I know this is going to be wrong, but I got to guess The Shining.
I'm sorry, the feed cut out there. What did you say?
I know this is going to be wrong, but I have to guess The Shining. Oh, God.
You say the Shining?
Yeah.
Not The Shining? But The Shining?
Are you making fun of my accent?
A little bit. A little bit.
You dick!
Kinda.
Oh,
Is that where you're going to go with?
I'm going to have to.
What if I said, what could possibly have some smooth jazz piano sounds that would also be Halloween related? You think Halloween and smooth jazz coming together, it could only be this one thing. Does that
Twin
help you?
Peaks.
Denise, that's incorrect. I'm so sorry.
Oh.
It's The Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown.
Oh, good grief.
So I think this is very appropriate that that's the one that tripped you up on. Being a horror film fan, the most wholesome thing on this entire show was the one thing that tripped you up.
That was too wholesome for me. Funny enough, I've seen this 1,000 times, but I would have never gotten that.
Not quite enough bloodshed in It's a Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown for you.
It doesn't really satisfy my gore desire.
But here's the joke. You still got the top grade in the quiz, and the power struggle wouldn't have helped you anyways, because you can't get anything higher than an A, is what you got.
I got an A.
Your final score is 26 out of a possible 28. That is an A. Denise, well done.
Woo!
Denise, first, thank you so much for lending your time and talents to the podcast and making it impossible for any of our listeners to beat you today, unless they got the power struggle and matched your score. That's the only way, because that's the tiebreaker in this case, I think. But did you have a good time being on the show today?
I had a great time. I'm not sure if I matched my last score. I think I got about an equal score.
Well, you got darn near perfect, so I don't know how you could really improve on that.
It rubs the lotion on its skin or else it gets the hose again.
All right, everybody. Do you remember your score? There were 28 points available, but let's see how well you did and get those ranks and grades. If you're playing against our special guest and scored less than 26 points, then you let Denise, Mistress of the Dark, beat you, and you may want to go back and brush up on your memories or your youth, unless getting beaten by a Mistress of the Dark is kind of your kink, in which case, hey, congrats, I guess. This episode, we heard Billy Corgan tell us that the world is a vampire, and we're using the Gen X movie vampire scoring system to grade the quiz. When it comes to the Gen X timeline, we had a lot of different kinds of vampires to choose from, and these are the ones that represent your ranks and grade for the quiz. We're not ranking the movies themselves here, just to let you know, but we're just ranking the vampires that are in them. There is a difference. Let's go to the ranks. A score of 24 to 28 points is the grade of an A. That earns you the rank of Gary Oldman as Vlad the Impaler Dracula in 1992's Bram Stoker's Dracula. The judges all agreed that this is the ultimate version of what a vampire should be. His truly chilling performance and faithful representation of Dracula has not been replicated to this day, in my opinion. This is the bar by which all other vampires should be measured, and it gets the top rank on today's quiz of an A, and an A for you as well for doing your part to save Generation X. Well done.
You really trust. Excuse me that I do not join you.
But I have already died. And I never drink wine.
A score of 20 to 23 points is enough for a B, and the rank of Alex Winter's character of Marco in The Lost Boys.
We don't know which one the leader is. I guess we'll just have to kill them all. We'll start with the little one. First come, first staked.
Good night, blood sucker.
No!
Look, if you're talking Gen X vampires and you don't mention The Lost Boys, then you have no business talking about Gen X vampires. However, it seemed wrong to give Keith Sutherland's character David as a B when he's clearly an A. So we felt to make it right, our second highest ranked vampire is Bill S. Preston Esquire.
Lucas.
Always the bridesmaid and never the bride, Marco felt almost like a friendly vampire that you wanted to hang out with and be buddies with. A vampire that was cool and that who you think you can kind of relate with. And that was his angle, played perfectly to draw in the next wave of vampires. This version of vampires was different in that they used a different tactic to draw in their prey. Peer pressure to be cool. So we give Alex Winter as Marco and you the most excellent grade of B on today's quiz.
Excellent!
A score of 17 to 19 points is enough for a C, and that gives you the rank of both Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt for their vampire roles in The Interview with the Vampire. If you end up in any rank that includes Brad Pitt, then you're doing okay, I think. But unless you're a psychologist or Oprah's couch, nobody should be afraid of Tom Cruise as a vampire. Sorry, I'm just not buying it.
Or Katie Holmes.
I guess so. Still, these variations of vampires are well documented to be the non-traditional and open the door for the sparkly vampires that so many love today. But we just can't help but think that these are not the same levels of vampires that people should aspire to be. Important vampires, I guess, but we have to give them only a C in the ranks. A score of 14 to 16 points is enough for a D, and the rank of George Hamilton in the role of Count Dracula in the 1979 film called Love at First Bite.
I do not drink wine.
Oh.
Denise, have you seen this movie?
Yes, I like it. It's a guilty pleasure of mine, which is why it's ranked so low, I guess.
I loved this movie as a kid. I'll get more into that in a minute. For many, many years, it was the top grossing independent film of all time, believe it or not. It was a Dracula spoof comedy romance movie that features Dracula being evicted from his Transylvania castle and relocating to Manhattan. Full of awful racial stereotypes, corny sexual humor, and a scene of Dracula disco dancing, this is something a six-year-old me should never have been allowed to watch many, many times in the theater alone. The movie's success hangs largely on George Hamilton's unique and charming version of a vampire. He's great, but if anyone knows anything about George Hamilton, is that he runs second place to Donald Trump in the Worst Tan of America contest. And the absolute last thing any vampire should ever aspire to is a great tan. That alone is enough for a rank of a D on the quiz.
Remember when he said, with you, never a quickie, always a Lonnie?
That is the one line that really stuck with me my entire life.
Me too.
I'm not lying. That's so funny that you remember that exact same line. That's awesome.
Yep.
That's
it's so the most funny. Memorable part of the movie.
You think so? I mean,
yeah.
I guess so. I mean, we both remember it.
After all these decades.
Yeah. And finally, if you scored 13 or less, well, that's a failing grade, I'm afraid. And I have the feeling this low rank is going to rub some people the wrong way. The rank for failing today's quiz is all the vampires in the Buffy the Vampire Slayer movie.
God, what's your damage?
Before anyone gets mad at me, hear me out. The movie was a lot of fun, and, you know, it holds a special place for late Gen X pop culture. But let's be real here. The vampires in the movie are a freaking joke. Anytime you have disposable vampires, it's a failure. I know it's a dark comedy horror movie, but it's not really that funny. And it's not much on horror. None of these reasons is why it gets an F, however. No, the F is because they have Rutger freaking Hauer in this movie, and his skills and intensity goes to waste. The dude was a Blade Runner, for crying out loud, and now he can't take on Buffy? I know she's the chosen one and got trained by Donald Sutherland, but it seems like a master vampire who's been alive for centuries should be more intimidating than his sidekick vampires, especially when one of those sidekick vampires is Pee-wee Herman. Paul Rubens is also a vampire here, and it really just kind of takes you out of the sense of danger or any true vampire vibes going on in this movie. So for being kooky vampires that can't take down Christy Swanson and Dylan McKay, this is an epic failure, as is this grade for getting an F for not getting more than 15 points on the quiz.
How funky is your chicken? How funky is your chicken? How loose is your goose? Our goose is totally loose.
The vampires didn't stand a chance against her keen fashion sense, though. So can you really blame them?
Judges?
You're one of those skanky old men that, like, attacks little girls and stuff, right? Well, forget you.
Even you two, judges? You're turning on me. I knew I'd run some people the wrong way on that one.
Does the word duh mean anything to you?
Try again on the next episode of The Home Game and see if you can't get a passing grade. Denise, do you have a message for those listening that you beat here today?
I'm happy that I matched my score from last time. And if they ever ask about me in Elvira's words, tell them I was more than just a great set of boobs. I was also an incredible pair of legs, and I had a hell of a lot of horror knowledge.
Before we leave, I have one shout out to give. I'd like to give a huge shout out to our new Patreon supporter, Ed, from South Royalton, Vermont. South Royalton is way better than North Royalton, by the way. Ed, thank you so much for all your support. We have tried several times to email you your Patreon rewards. Ed, but your inbox is full. I'm sure you're listening. I mean, what else is there to do this time of year in South Royalton, Vermont? But please let us know how we can reach you and get you your benefits. But until then, here's a Gen X sound clip in your honor that we think is quite appropriate for this situation.
Welcome. You've got mail. File's done. Goodbye.
We hope you enjoyed playing along this episode of The Home Game, and we'll post your score on our Facebook group page. If you're interested in supporting the show, we have a Patreon account set up for those who would like to take advantage of our special rewards that we give out for becoming a Patreon subscriber, just like Ed did. However, if you want to send some appreciation for what we're trying to do here, we also offer our Venmo account. And if you'd like, you can send that to Who Will Save Gen X. Detailed information is available in the show notes for both of these ways to send some love to the show. If you have questions, comments, a shout out, or would like to sign up to become a guest on the show, you can email me at whowillsavegenx@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your feedback. We invite you to become a friend of the show. Well, that's it for this edition of The Home Game. Thanks so much to all of you for listening wherever you are. We'll be back with our regular version of the podcast in the next episode, where we will once again ask the question, who will save Generation X? Later.
Hope your Halloween is extra special. Unpleasant dreams, darlings.
Dracula in New York. His style is irresistible. His curiosity is irrepressible. And when he takes a bite out of the Big Apple, his appetite is insatiable.
If you're hungry, Master, we could ring for the night, maid.
George Hamilton.
His blood in your eye.
Susan St. James. Richard Benjamin. Dick Shawn. Sherman Hemsley. Isabel Sanford. And Artie Johnson as Renfield.
Love at first bite.
Go to bed, maybe get in a little quickie?
No. With you, never a quickie. Always a longie.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
GEICO makes it easy to get affordable renter's insurance in as little as 90 seconds. That way, you have more energy for harder things, like the laundry. Why is it so difficult to fold clothes? They just end up wrinkly anyway, or on the floor in a pile that just sits there, taunting you. But with renter's insurance through GEICO, at least you know that those clothes and the other things you love are covered. Get more with GEICO.